Clevelanders need a public option when it comes to things like golfing and farmers markets?
No, of course not.
Then why do they keep paying for them?
You got me, brother.
We're here at the West Side Market, a vital part of Cleveland since 1912.
What's the kind of historic role of the West Side Market in Cleveland as an institution or a place of business?
It's families helping families here.
You cannot find anywhere in Cleveland more varieties of potatoes.
Okay, and shallots?
14!
Okay. West Side Market is a great place to buy groceries, but the vendors who rent stalls here have plenty of complaints. So what needs to get done that's not getting done?
Everything from the sewers to water lines to backups.
In the restroom upstairs, you have hot water and cold water. When you wash your hands, you have to move your hands like that.
Just letting the place fall apart.
The city doesn't have $20 to buy a faucet.
So who's running this place anyway?
My name is George Braddock, and I am the manager of the West Side Market.
George works for the city of Cleveland, which owns and operates the West Side Market. Are you happy with the way the city runs the building and runs the market?
No.
In an age when most grocery stores are open 24 hours a day, the West Side Market is only open 4 days a week. Does that make good business sense?
Does the market make money for the city?
No.
We heard a similar story at Highland Hills Golf Course, which is also owned by the city. Even though the greens fees are some of the lowest in the city, play has been down in recent years. Between 2001 and 2005, the number of rounds played at Highland Hills dropped by nearly 50%.
I think this golf course is shortchanged. Look at the grass and tell that it's some of it is not cut and some of it is cut.
It's no surprise that golfers don't want to play at courses that aren't well maintained. For only a few bucks more per round, Clevelanders can go to Briarwood, a privately owned course just down the road from Seneca, Cleveland's other municipally owned golf course.
How does your course compare to the two courses that the city of Cleveland owns and operates?
It's well above theirs.
Do you guys golf at the Cleveland courses at all, the two courses that Cleveland owns and operates?
No.
Feed off.
Are golf courses a kind of core business that a city should be figuring out how to run and to be expert at?
Probably not, because you'd like to actually have someone that's been into business or knows more about it.
Is it surprising to you that the publicly owned and operated golf courses and markets are inferior to the privately owned ones?
Does it surprise you?
We're all familiar with the saying, good enough for government work. But maybe Cleveland taxpayers deserve better than good enough. Is there any evidence that private firms can do a better job, whether we're talking about running a golf course or paving city streets? We went to Chicago, a city that has privatized a number of its assets recently through a process called public-private partnerships.
This entire section underneath the new Millennium Park, which was built with largely private donations and private funds, is the largest underground parking system in the world. That system was formerly owned by the government, by the city, and now it's been privatized.
Michael Smith is an attorney at Baker & McKenzie. Over the past few years, Michael has represented firms bidding to lease city assets.
The first privatization was the Skyway. It's a large privatization. It was the Skyway, which is just out there on the horizon. And then the parking meters along Columbus and Michigan Avenue and then throughout the rest of the city were privatized after that. The marketplace is looking at these assets and saying, this is the money that the government's generating out of the asset. Look at how much more can be captured if you take it into a private regime.
Not only has Chicago generated more than $3.5 billion during its recent leasing spree, but the operating firms are investing millions more in order to provide better service. Many of Chicago's 36,000 meters are being replaced by solar-powered meters that accept credit cards. And the parking garage beneath Millennium Park now offers shuttle service to Soldier Field when the Bears are in town.
In most publicly run assets, there's efficiencies that can be gained when you bring revenue into the equation as the central important function of the asset. When the government's doing it, sometimes they're not necessarily thinking about that.
What is the kind of total volume of business that's done here?
If you're speaking about dollar-wise, I couldn't answer that.
There are critics, of course, who are uncomfortable with private entities operating assets that have long been run by the city. Others worry about fee increases.
What we had in Chicago and what you have in most cities is a subsidized meter system. And you had the private parking garages having to compete with that lower number. The meters were cheap, but there was no parking because the price wasn't set to the demand.
Cruising for street parking is a needless waste of resources, and it contributes significantly to downtown traffic congestion. According to studies, something like 30% of the congestion in downtown commercial districts is a direct result of cruising. In Chicago today, not only is there less congestion, but the private firms that provide parking in the city are now competing on an even playing field. The biggest opponents to privatization are often unionized city employees like George, who are afraid they'll lose their jobs. But that need not be the case.
One of the concessions that's been pretty common in most of the privatizations, both in the U.S. and internationally, is for the existing employees of the privatized system to be entitled to continue in their current function, whatever that may be. The bidders will say, this is what I'll bid if I don't have to take on all the existing employees, and this is what I'll bid if I do.
Privatization is really nothing new, but it's becoming an increasingly attractive option for cash-strapped cities across the country. We spoke with one of the nation's leading experts on privatization to learn more about the process.
My name is Steve Goldsmith. I'm a professor of government and director of the Innovations in American Government program at Harvard.
As mayor of Indianapolis for two terms in the 1990s, Goldsmith privatized a number of city assets as well as 80 city services through a managed competition process.
And every time we created a competitive bidding platform, on an average, we saved 25%. And the cumulative effect of those competitions was about $450 million in savings. And more importantly, every time we saved a dollar, we actually increased the quality of the work.
Managed competition allows public unions to bid for contracts along with private entities. But at least at first, the unions resisted.
In our city, we had 7 AFSCME unions that were very anxious at the beginning of the process. They were really mad about privatization. They were anxious about competition. But what happened over time was that the men and women who actually did the work came out ahead, because sometimes they would bid and win. Sometimes they would bid and lose, but the winning vendor would take the employees. They would come up with systems where the workers could do more, could have more discretion, could earn more money.
This privatization stuff seems like a good deal for citizens and, amazingly enough, for union members who are willing to compete as well. Are there other benefits?
One of the key benefits, in particular for Chicago with what we've just gone through with Blagojevich and our history, our long history, is that privatization adds transparency to government.
A little transparency would do wonders for the Cleveland metro area, where FBI agents have recently unearthed widespread corruption among local officials.
It's easier to run a government when you don't have commercial jobs to hand out to people and commercial contracts to give people. It takes the candy away from the kids.
It's clear that privatizing assets and opening city services to a managed competition process can make cities more efficient and better able to take care of core functions like maintaining infrastructure. But how can a city like Cleveland generate the necessary political consensus?
People who are wealthy, they can move or they can buy their services. Right? So the systems today, these bureaucratic systems, are unfair to the people who are poorest and locked in those communities. So let's make the case for change to them.
If the building was sold to a private operator, do you think that would be better for you or worse for you?
It would be better for the general public.
Privatization projects generate cash, increase the quality of city services, and help make governments more transparent. What's not to like? Come on, Cleveland, privatize it.